We're getting ready to start the Pack Stretch podcast. I'm Zoe. He is Jeff Siegel. Jeff, good morning. How are you? You are out here bright and early. Got a horse working this morning.
That's right. I'm out here. How am I? I got a bad. I don't know what it is.
Last week we were raving about your first timed workout. What has happened since last week?
I come up with some kind of Achilles problem here. I don't know if that's my body falling apart or an excuse not to continue to work out after I've done it for 1 week. But no, I think I'll be okay.
So you're a true athlete with an Achilles tendon injury, because that's what true athletes get.
I think that's what it is. I don't know. It hurts. That's all I can tell you. But I'm giving. Anyway, I'm in not so good shape. But there were some very good 3-year-olds in very good shape. We will talk about that in a bit. But some news breaking out of Maryland this morning, and I know that you're on top of this. So tell me what Pimlico is going to look like in X amount of years.
Well, this basically was announced earlier today, and it's basically a win-win for all the parties involved. A lot was made of the fact perhaps to move the Preakness to Laurel Park, and the city of Baltimore wants to keep it at Laurel, at Pimlico, but they really need to refurbish Pimlico and make it, a bit more customer-friendly. So this was announced earlier. The expected legislation preserves the Preakness Stakes at Pimlico, enhances year-round sustainable racing at Laurel Park with the state-of-the-art modern facilities and spurs community redevelopment efforts in and around Pimlico. So basically, they've budgeted an awful lot of money to refurbish Pimlico and the surrounding areas for the community. It will enhance year-round racing at Laurel. It's a win-win for the community. It's a win-win for the Stronach Group. And it appears for the first time in quite some time that everybody is happy. Now, you can go to the Paulette Report and read the whole report for yourself. But I think it's a good thing.
Well, I also think it's a good thing because apparently a lot of money is now going to be infused to Laurel. They're going to, I think, tear down the grandstand at Laurel, build a new one. I haven't been to Laurel since 1980-something, so I haven't seen it since they've upgraded it. But I always liked it there, and I think there's potential there for Laurel to really grow. I know they've got much better purse money than they used to, and it's a very, very promising situation in Maryland. So I don't know. I read the story as you did. I didn't see a timeline as to when this might actually take place. But apparently, the government is going to kick in, and they're all for it. So apparently, it's going to happen. So good news there for the Stronach Group, and good news for Maryland race goers. And let's kick on with it.
And that's important because horse racing at this time needs an influx of money. It needs some moving forward in the right direction. So it's great news for racing up there on the Eastern Seaboard, for Maryland, for everybody involved.
Speaking of the Preakness, because that's what we were just speaking about, you and I are ticketed. I'm ticketed, and so are you, to go up to Golden Gate Fields a week from Saturday. That'll be the running of the El Camino Real Derby, 1 1/8. Pretty testing event there on the all-weather surface. And the winner gets an automatic entry fee paid. Into the Preakness this year. So it's a good race. It's a good prep. It's got some derby points assigned to it. It is an all-weather racetrack. I'm curious to see who might venture to Golden Gate Fields for that race. Can't wait. I looked at the condition book. It's going to be an incredible program. They got all the good races that day. So you and I will be up there a week from Saturday, and hopefully we'll have a good race to talk about. We had several really good races to talk about that took place last week in the Derby division, Zoe, and a number of very important performances for horses that I think have to be taken very seriously. And among them, of course, was the Holy Bull Stakes winner, Tis the Law.
Well, let's take a look back at the Holy Bull, a Grade 3 event. Did go to Tis the Law. He was the favorite. And I watched the race, and I cringed for the first half a mile.
You and me both.
And I think this is primarily an effort of the trainer versus the jock. Manny Franco didn't have an easy trip in the jockey club, where he was defeated 3/4 of a length, ran a very good race. So he comes back. He draws inside in a small field of 7, 3rd of 7, and basically Barkley Tagg has told Manny, who's now worried if he doesn't ride this horse correctly, he'll get taken off the horse. You get to the outside, whatever you do. Now, this horse broke 3 in front. If you're a validated Hall of Famer, if you're Johnny V, you just, the horse broke so fast, you just go on with it. You just say, well, you know, this is what happens. But poor Manny Franco, hearing those instructions in his head, I thought, oh my goodness, I broke three in front, but I have to get to the outside. So he reels him in, gets stuck behind horses. Luckily, he gets outside and goes on about his business. And at the end of the day, everybody's happy.
You're in a triple-digit buyer, did Tis the Law, earning the 100 buyer number. Zoe, you tried to give justice to the terrible trip that Tis the Law was given. And I think you succeeded. But unless you go out and actually watch the race, you can't really appreciate what a miserable trip and ride it was. And again,
But I think this is part of what happens when you're a young rider trying to stay with a potential Derby horse. You want to follow instructions, but at the same time, when that gate opens and you break two in front, like he did, he broke like a quarter horse. Should just go on.
Or then go outside. Now you're assuming, and I'm not.
Those were the instructions.
The instructions was to take him back?
The instructions were get outside.
Well, he could have opened up three and then stayed outside.
Exactly.
The bottom line is, Barkley Tagg apparently has put is messing with Franco here. After that miserable trip that Tis the Law had in the Kentucky Jockey Club, a race in which he finished third in it.
He
was stuck inside and was much the best that day at 3-5, got beat. Otherwise, he'd be undefeated. But Tis the Law, as you pointed out, broke running, could have opened up at will and won that race by 10.
What are the running comments, Siegel?
Wrangled back, steadied, and lugged in. That pretty much says it all. But here's the point, though. Through it all, Tis the Law is a really, really good colt. In my opinion, by far the best three-year-old that I saw last weekend, anyway. And we had four significant stakes races run for three-year-olds. Apparently now, what is next for Tis the Law? Would it be the Florida Derby, you think, or something else that they might go for?
I'm pretty sure that I read they're not looking to tackle the heavyweights just yet, and it looks like it may be New Orleans.
Okay, that would be the Louisiana Derby then?
Yeah.
Okay, that's mid-March. Actually, the timing is better for that.
So I'm not sure they want to knock heads with the big guys. They may go to New Orleans because they have a long stretch there in case you get stuck inside.
Let me tell you something. He is the big guy. Tis the Law, as far as I'm concerned, down there. I have him number three on my list, and we'll get to the list in a second. But Tis the Law is serious colt. He's by constitution, and owned by the same people that own Funnyside. And if they don't mess him up, and I mean that sincerely, because they've done a good job in the last two races of trying to mess him up, they being either the jockey, the trainer, or the instructions, or however else you want to talk about it, this is a colt that could really be a serious racehorse. His name is Tis the Law. He was the winner of the Holy Bull. Now we come out to California to talk about Thousand Words. And Thousand Words has got a great resume. He's 3-3. The buyer numbers have advanced in every start. He's gone from 88 to 91 to 92. Still 8 points less than what Tis the Law earned in his win in the Holy Bull. 1,000 Words was 3-5. He won the race by 3/4 of a length in a race in which the whole field kind of finished in a heap. I want your opinion of his performance. I want you to tell me what you think of 1,000 Words going in and coming out.
I think he ran like a good horse. His buyer numbers are steady. I don't think he's ever going to impress. He doesn't impress in the morning. He was very, very well behaved in the paddock. I like what I've seen. And he, to me, looks like a horse who's only going to get better. He sat in the pocket under Flavian Pratt. He wasn't rank. He didn't worry about the kickback. And he just does what he has to. And that's important. He's by Pioneer of the Nile. Out of a Pomeroy mare, so he needs to save all the energy he has. He's out of that wonderful sprinter Pomeroy's Pistol. So I think the fact that he can relax, can save his energy, and still finish is a key for 1,000 Words, and he looks like a big player in the division. And by the way, congratulations to Bob Baffert getting his 3,000th win with 1,000 Words.
That is funny, yeah. All right, that's nice, what you just said. I don't disagree with you. I just wonder, though, if he's really going to be a serious player in this division, and we have to compare him now to some of the others we talked about, including a horse like Tis the Law, I would just wonder just how much ability he really has. Now, obviously, he's a good horse, but he doesn't seem to have the blast, the turn of foot, the acceleration, the speed necessary to extract himself in a big field. He's a high class grinder is what I would call him. He's what you mentioned about him doing everything right is in a way it's good.
I mean, you could be also similarly talking about the horse of the year, Bricks and Mortar, who just did what he had to,
but
extracted himself at the right point and won all his races. This guy's undefeated. I can't knock him.
Well, I can't knock him either, other than the fact that he's beating Royal Act and...
Who ran very well first time on the dirt.
Well, again, I don't... everything is... we're comparing
him... What's he going to do, win by 10?
I'd like to see that, sure. That would show me something. Justified
Horse of the Year didn't win by 10.
Who didn't?
Horse of the Year, Bricks and Mortar.
That's a grass race. That doesn't count.
I'm just saying,
Siegel. Where was Bricks and Mortars in the Triple Crown 2 years ago? He wasn't even... nobody even heard of him. Don't talk about Bricks and Mortars as in the Derby division.
I just don't think I can knock. I can't knock a horse who's a perfect 3 for 3.
I can knock him in
this
way.
He's done everything right.
I'll only say one thing about 1,000 Words. I'll say two things. Three things. Number one, I wish I owned him. Number two is I wish I had $1 million to buy him originally. And number three, Bob Baffert's got two others in the barn that are better. So
let's move on.
All right.
Withers. Max Player broke through in a big way, taking down the Withers for trainer Linda Rice, the son of Honor Code, out of the lot, not for love mare. Falls in love, 86 by a speed figure. Does he belong?
I think so. He's only had 3 starts. He is, in fact, not undefeated. He got beat somehow in his debut at Parks, came back and won. His buyer number improved from a 72 to 86, which is still far removed from what he's going to need to be competitive with the best. But he's already been a mile and an eighth. He's by Honor Code. He should get better with age. He's out of a mare by Not For Love. Not For Love, of course, the sire of the Dam of California Chrome. And he did win this race, beating the Remsen winner, Shotsky, and he did it right. He did it a nice way. He's running on a very deep track there. It's hard to tell how good he is. Linda Rice is probably going to do right by him. I don't think she's going to go after the big easy quite yet. But anytime you get a colt bred like he is that can win going a mile and an eighth in February of his 3-year-old season, you know at least you're not going to worry about the Derby distance. How good is he? We don't know. But I think he's got improvement in him, and I think Max Player, he's one to follow, I'll say that. He's not there yet, but there's a potential for him to be there eventually.
How about the Swale at Gulfstream Park Grade 3 event? Mischievous Alex now 2 for 2 in his last two. Took down the Swale 1 by 7, was 4.5 to 1, a son of Intermischief. What do we think about the John Service trainee?
Well, I was more curious to hear what John Service thought about him, because after you win a race like the Swale, the natural progression is to stretch him out and see what you have. And being by Into Mischief and out of Mare by Spites Down, on pedigree, he really should be a miler. But his two most recent races, you mentioned, he won going 7/8 at Parks in the Parks Juvenile, which no big deal there, but he did win by almost 10. He comes back and wins the Swale. He did it nicely. Wins by 7, took heat, came away. 93 buyer number. There's nothing wrong with this. And I know a lot of trainers, some of whom have never had a Derby horse, some of whom have won several Derbies, would automatically say, all right, next is Fountain of Youth or something else. And then John Service says, nope, he's staying around one turn for the time being.
Because he's already gone 2 turns and he's got beaten.
Well, that's true, but that was way back as a 2-year-old. I think he's doing the right thing. Don't get me wrong. I admire John Service for doing the right thing, because when you have a 3-year-old who wins a race like that with a fast figure and a big figure and bred like he is and all that, how do you not catch Derby fever and say, I'm going to make him prove to me that he can't run this far? John Service says, he's already proven it. I'm going to make him a miler. And that's great. And I admire John for doing that. A couple others, Greenlight Go, I thought was disappointing. I thought maybe he would develop, and maybe he's not going to be a 3-year-old that we can talk about among those who are in the Derby picture. So, but I have to tip my hat to Mischievous Alex. He was nice in victory, another one of those Into Mischiefs. And looks like if they do right by him, which apparently they will, he's got a chance to build on his resume. This week, we've got a couple of really good races coming up, Zoe. We've got the Sam F. Davis at Tampa Bay. We've got the San Vicente on Sunday here at Santa Anita. Of course, all eyes on Independence Hall. Will he remove any and all doubts that I have on him, that he can go on and be what they're hoping he's going to be as he tries 2 turns for the first time? And he will obviously be the favorite in the Sam F. Davis.
Yeah, and they're staying home. I mean, this seems to be an easier spot. Grade 3 event worth 250,000. 17 Kentucky Derby quality points, and they're opting for that one rather than next weekend's 400,000 Risen Star, which is worth 85 points. That's 50 to the winner. And that basically gives you an in into the Kentucky Derby. So that's a big decision made by Mike Trombetta and his team.
I think it's the right decision. Independence Hall is training there at that racetrack down there in Tampa Bay. There's no ship involved. The competition should be well within his range. I don't think he has to go out and prove anything yet. There will be plenty of opportunities in the Triple Crown and before to prove that he belongs. But in the meantime, the path of least resistance, I always feel, is the smart way to go about it. And I think we'll see Independence Hall. But I'm curious to see, because it's not going to be enough for him just to win the race, which I think he will. He's got to go out and do it the way he's supposed to do it, like he did it when he won the Nashua,
right.
Not the way he did it when he won the Jerome. So very interested to see Independence Hall on Saturday. I mentioned on Sunday the San Vicente at 7/8 of a mile, the first start of the year for the Eclipse Award-winning two-year-old Storm the Court. And looking at the nominations for that race, Zoe, it's going to be a small field, and I can't find a horse in the among the nomination list that really should even be able to warm him up. So you got to think he's going to go out and win. How's he been doing?
Really good. Yeah. He's training really, really well for him. He's a good horse. He's grown up a lot since taking down the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. But, I mean, who's he facing in here? I mean, obviously he's going to face a couple from the Baffert Barn. Azul Coast work this morning. I don't know where Authentic's going. Absolute Unit, another of Peter Ernst's, is nominated. Looks like his future may be on the turf, at least for now. I don't know. I can't think where all the competition's going to come from.
I'm looking at the nomination list. Ginobili from Maltus is nominated. I mean, Nadal, we'll talk about him in a second. He's not going to run. The rest of these horses are just horses. I mean, they're not even that good. So I'm looking forward to a rather significant coming out as a three-year-old for Storm the Court. And then they can live the dream until the next one.
Let's not forget the ladies that are running this weekend at Santa Anita, the Las Virgines.
Yeah.
It's going to be Bob Baffert with quite a few in there again. Venetian Harbor, perhaps, maybe we'll get to see her. She broke a maiden on the 29th of December by 10 for Richard Bolters, who's just winning races in bunches right now.
Looks sensational doing it. The form hasn't quite held up out of that race yet, but that's not her problem. She won by 10.
Exactly.
So I'm very much looking for that. Not a glamorous division per se, three-year-old fillies this time of the year. Not sure if Bast is going to run or not, but there's some nice up-and-coming fillies, and that'll be a good race that takes place, I believe, on Saturday, correct?
Correct.
All right, so now here's my top 10 Derby rankings for this week. But in addition to that, I'm going to also include the morning line for this week's Future Book poll, which is a pool which will be offered. 24 possibilities, 23 horses, and then the mutual field, which, by the way, is 5-2. So that you can bet on the mutual pool Future Book this week. I think it's the second edition or second installment of that. Number one, I have Nadal. I had him number one last week. I had a number one after breaking his maiden. And Zoe got a chance to watch him breeze this morning. What can you tell me about how he breezed for Bob Baffert?
He looked fantastic. He worked with a Warfront colt of Bob's, broke off on the outside. God, he's a big, I'd love to put him on the scale right now. He is a big, beautiful, good-looking son of Blaine. Drayden Van Dyke was aboard him. Joel Rosario was slated to ride him in his debut. He couldn't make it back from Saudi, so Diaz rode him. But I'm pretty sure that Joel keeps the mount. Drayden was on him this morning, and he looked amazing. Just breezing, 47-4. Nice gallop out for Nadal. You can catch that on xbtv.com. But he looked fabulous.
Does he look like a colt that will get a mile and a quarter?
Looks like Blaine.
He's well, Blaine
beautiful.
Did.
Yeah, exactly.
Unfortunately.
So he is a big, beautiful everything. And I'm watching him from the top of the grandstand here. And you could just see the size of him, the muscles.
He's a tank, isn't he?
He looked amazing this morning.
Yeah. All right. So he's number one for me, even though all he has on his resume is a maiden, very impressive maiden win, sprinting, first time out. And we'll just have to see where Bob decides to send him. Number two is his stablemate, Authentic.
Now, Nadal's 12-1.
Now, that's right. Nadal is 12-1. He's the morning line. This is the morning line for the future book, 12-1. He's not the favorite. We'll get to him in a second. Authentic is 15-1.
Okay.
I have him number two. Bob told me he weighed Authentic the other day, and he is it possible that he could be 1,300 pounds? Is it possible? I think that's what he told me. I said, really? That's a little heavy, isn't it? He says, no, he's massive, you know.
That's a big horse.
It is a big horse.
So it's possible Dawn Chatless had that filly, Cliverty, that won the full sister tour of Aiton.
Right.
She weighed in at 12.90 the other day.
So it's possible. Yeah, so Authentic, I have number, he's number two. Of course, green is grass when he won the Bob Lewis, but he did it like a colt that could be any kind. Bob's still sticking to the story that he thought that he veered in and almost hit the rail and veered over like four lanes and looked at the grandstand because he heard the noise from the grandstand. I was on the apron. I didn't hear any noise. So I'm not sure if that's really what happened or not. He can be a little flighty, though.
He can be a little flighty. Yeah. He unseated Drayden Van Dyke prior to his work the other morning. Right. So, you know, he can be a little bit antsy, but I'm not sure about the noise, perhaps. Some shadow, because there's a lot of shadowing from the grandstand on the main track in
that,
the afternoon.
I can buy that.
Seems a more viable.
Right. I don't think that Nadal and Authentic will race against each other until the Kentucky Derby if they each of them get that far. I think Bob will split them up one way or the other. Number three, Tis the Law, who is actually the favorite among those that are listed. I mentioned them, the Future Book has the Mutual Field at 5-2, but then Tis the Law 8-1. Very, very impressive colt. One, of course, was as impressive as you could possibly be when he won the race in New York last fall and Champaign. And I think you'll see him get a lot of play now. He is a good colt. Dennis's Moment, number four on my list. He's 12-1. Apparently, he's training
he's
up to the
forward every Saturday. He
Number five, I have Storm the Court. He's listed at 30-1, which is a big number for the champion two-year-old. Independence Hall, I have number six. He's listed on the morning line for the future book bet at 10-1. Number seven, Thousand Words at 15-1, and then Governor Morris at 30-1. He's supposed to run. I think it's the South. What is he supposed
Southwest,
to run?
Southwest, perhaps?
I think. I think he's going to be running soon, training for Todd Pletcher and apparently making progress. Very promising colt again by Constitution. And so that's my top eight. You got anybody you want to throw in there that I haven't included?
There were a couple of newcomers that maybe we might mention on the Black Book segment. I thought Edge of Fire for trainer Jimmy Jerkins, even though I think he only got a 67 by a speed
figure.
Well,
he didn't even try in the race.
Winning. You know. I thought he looked fantastic. And for all the maiden winners last week, I'm going to take him, Edge of Fire.
He's by Curlin, right?
He's by Curlin. Okay. Beautiful, good-looking colt. We saw his work.
He won going six furlongs. Never took a deep breath.
Correct.
Didn't run fast, but...
No.
That no one thinks that he couldn't have run faster if he had to.
Exactly.
And so that's good. And
I like him. And then there's a horse that just debuted for Eric Gio called Six Toe, ran an 81 by a
that's
speed
good.
Figure. Mm-hmm. That was at Aqueduct and looks like he'll be pointing to the road to the Kentucky Derby.
And he is by Curlin.
Yeah.
Can't get much better than that.
It seems like we talk about Curlin all the time when we're on the road to the Derby.
I think he'll make it as a stallion.
You think he will?
I think he will. All right. Meanwhile, while we wait and talk about the Derby and wait for the preps, and again, we just want to mention, of course, we've got Sam F. Davis on Saturday, San Vicente on Sunday. Those are the two big prep races this week. Churchill Downs is going to join the 21st century, apparently.
And, about time.
And they will get a 20-stall starting gate for the Kentucky Derby. None of this auxiliary gate with the gap in the middle and all other stuff. I mean, I don't know. You're an ex-rider. What do you think?
I think it's great because for a while people thought, well, if you're on the outside and you're right next to the auxiliary gate, it gives you a bit more space if they come together. But what happens if you're in... What does it start at 16 to 17? If you're in 17 and you're in 16, and if you happen to break a little bit slow between either one of those, you're getting sandwiched
right.
Because horses will gravitate towards an empty space. So I don't know why it wasn't thought of sooner. It's 65 foot wide. It's been commissioned. They have long gates all over the rest of the world, but apparently it's eluded Kentucky for an awfully long time.
They never thought about it.
So finally we have our 20 horse gate, and it's a great idea. And it will have a massive impact in the post-position draw, as in a good way, because now there's no ands, ifs, or buts.
Right. It's weird when you have that big gap. I think it's between 14 and 16. I could be wrong. Maybe it's 16. I don't know. Bottom line is it's good to have a 20-stall gate. Makes it fair for kind of everybody, I suppose. And really, the outside post is not bad at Churchill Downs at Kentucky, the Kentucky Derby. You see a lot of
big
horses.
Ground.
on there. Big Brown was in the 20 hole. That's where they wanted. They actually chose that post. All right, so much more to talk about with regards to the Derby as we continue and get closer. I want to bring the topic of discussion back here to California, though, Zoe. And Santa Anita, I noticed when the condition book came out that we're not racing this weekend, this week on Thursdays, for this week Thursday or the following Thursday, three-day week. And
well, one of them will be 4 days because of the holiday on the
exactly.
Monday.
Exactly. But we saw last week when we had a Friday program, they're only carding seven races now, and the fields aren't particularly strong. They're not particularly deep. And I'm going to... I did some research, okay?
Okay.
And I wanted to point this out because I've always been a proponent of the fact that we should take our main track, our dirt track, and convert it into an outer grass course like Woodbine does, and then have the inner track all weather. Now, one of the reasons why I thought this was going to happen, and it may still happen, I don't know, but because of all of the issues we had last year with the main track. And you got to admit, the main track has been playing really, really well this year. I mean, the fatalities that we've had have all but disappeared, at least. I hope I'm not jinxing it, but first 6 weeks or so of the meeting has been really good. And but I still would prefer to have grass racing. And I wanted to bring this up because this year I checked all the races this year. These were the entrants of the races, not after scratches, before scratches. And what I came up with was that in dirt races, entries for dirt races were drawing an average of 6.45 per race. Grass races were averaging 9.45 races, almost 50% more entrants in grass races than there are on dirt races. And I think the racing fan out here likes bigger fields. Grass racing is more exciting. I think horses stay sounder a little longer, a lot longer. They handle more money. And I'm wondering if Santa Anita is ever going to realize this and make the switch to something that I would love to see happen, and I have no idea if it's ever going to happen, but that is to take the outer dirt track, make it turf. You'll be able to put the downhill turf course, a 6.5 in play, because there will not be no more crossover on the dirt surface anymore, and then make the inner track either dirt or all weather.
This has been mentioned. Aiden Butler has mentioned this right. In some of the talks about Santa Anita. And I mean, when you're talking about facts and figures, dirt entrance 6.45, grass 9.46, per Jeff Siegel here, who's done the research. I think one of the things you're seeing with turf racing is horses will try the dirt, and rather than drop a horse to, say, 8,000 or 10,000, a lot of these turf races are being written with a $20,000 claiming tag. So rather than drop your horse who's not performing well on the dirt straight to the bottom, you have a chance. Well, let's try the horse on grass. And I think that's where the bulk of this turf racing is coming from. They're riding lower level claimers on the turf, which will give people a chance before they just drop their horse in for $8,000 to try the horse on the turf.
Well, not only that, but if a horse doesn't like the dirt or can't act on the dirt, and this is a very deep main track, we know that, and a lot of horses can't handle it, they leave town. They go to Turf Paradise. They go to Golden Gate. They go somewhere else. And those are horses that could fill races here. If you had the ability to run a 12-5 claiming race on turf, as Golden Gate does, or 16, or a maiden 25, which they do at Gulfstream Park. Gulfstream Park does that. So what I'm saying is that the issue isn't only for soundness and safety and the fact that horses will be able to run more often and the fact that they'll handle more money and that the fan will like it, but you'll have a much greater inventory of horses to choose from if you have the ability for these cheaper horses to run on grass, which we do not offer anymore or can't because we have to preserve the inner turf course here. That's what I'm thinking and why I think it's going to be a good idea. Not for all the reasons. I would just like for someone to tell me I'm wrong, and here's why, and I have not had one person tell me I'm wrong and why. There is no wrong. It should be done. And I hope that someday Santa Anita management decides to do that. I think it'll be exciting. And I think it'll be worthwhile, and I'm not in charge, and I don't have to pay for it, so I can talk about it all I want.
And there you have it. Jeff Siegel has spoken. Well, Siegel, I think we're about out of time. Hopefully you're a little sounder.
I don't know. I'm going to miss my scheduled start at the Rose Bowl next week.
I think you're faking it.
No, I'm not faking it. I actually went and bought $145 shoes. So I went and did everything I'm supposed to do, and I enjoyed it. And now I can't barely walk. So maybe I'm too old, or maybe.
Fortunately, the horses are doing far better than Jeff Siegel.
Yeah.
That'll do it for this week's Backstretch podcast. For Jeff Siegel, I'm Zoe. We'll see you next week.